Welcome to In Dark Places, the happiest place on earth. This is Our Haunted World, Chapter 3. We got tons of cool stories for you this week. We got a story about the Hat Man. We have one super creepy story about an Uber driver who has a ghost passenger. We have a story about Sleepy Hollow. And it may not be the Sleepy Hollow you're familiar with. Spoiler alert. All this and so much more. And now, here is the news from the unknown. Footage captures first Loch Ness Monster sighting of 2022. A Loch Ness Monster watcher believes he has captured footage of the first sighting of 2022 after a three-month period of inactivity in the waters. When it comes to looking out for the mysterious creature, Ian O'Foldhagen is a veteran who had his first sighting back 35 years ago in 1987. The 57-year-old even has a Loch Ness Monster webcam that records possible sightings, which he then posts online. After a three-month drought of sightings, O'Foldhagen had been watching the webcam on Wednesday, March 23rd, when he clocked something unexplained. He described how two objects were moving parallel to each other across the middle of the screen, the Daily Record reported. Thanks, Daily Record. Posting the clip on YouTube, O'Foldhagen wrote, "The sighting was subsequently removed from the sightings register after it was claimed to be two paddleboarders that were the cause of the disturbance in the water." But he added, "The viewers can decide for themselves." However, some viewers were less convinced that the footage captured an image of the infamous Loch Ness Monster. One person wrote, "Wow, I want the last 2 minutes of my life back." "There's nothing there," said another person. And someone else added, "That could literally be a log of some debris. Literally. Some other simple and common animal." Love that word. To which O'Foldhagen replied, "The more northerly object takes a sharp turn to the left, leaving an unusual wake. You would have to rule out a log or debris. And it's not consistent of a seal to react in such a manner." Last year, the Loch Ness Monster had been spotted lurking near the shore by a wild camper. It's a wild camper. With the footage captured on a drone by Richard Maver, as he filmed for his YouTube channel, Richard Outdoors. As the drone flies above the lock, it is thought to have captured the figure with a long neck and a large body, resembling the creature swimming on the lock's banks. In 2021, there were 6 sightings of the creature, according to the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, taking the overall total of sightings to date to 1,136. Expert Steve Feldham believes the webcam sightings do far more damage than good to the credibility of this world-famous mystery. Eon sighting has now been subsequently been replaced by a second report, which is now considered to be the first official sighting of 2020, by documentary maker Jamie Huntley. Visiting from Tyne and Wear, he and colleague Warren Speed say they spotted a large object or creature in the lock with what looked like whale skin crossed with fish skin. On the morning of March 30th, Jamie stated that he had been driving past Bokaskine Cemetery when they spotted the huge object, but were only able to capture the ripples in the aftermath of his passing on camera. He said, "The object or creature was reflecting the water, so it looked wet, almost like a whale skin crossed with a fish skin. It was dark in color, darker than the water surrounding it. These were dark gray, black, brown in color. It almost looked like how a whale hump might look
breaking the surface, minus the fin.
He estimated the part of the object was high above the water, about 7 feet in height. Speaking of the newer sighting, Nessie expert Steve said that he is far more convinced by this incident than the earlier webcam one. He said, "It's maybe not the best report ever, but having spoken to both witnesses in person, I am convinced of their honesty and confusion at what it could possibly be that they witnessed." Steve has now called for the webcam sighting to be ignored by fans of the monster from around the globe. So this is Our Haunted World, Chapter 3. Jimmy is setting up the diving board right about now, and we're going to dive right into this week's episode, right after your Nicolas Cage Meltdown of the Week.
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
Hey, what's the nipper?
What's that?
What's the nipper this week?
I don't know.
You don't know yet?
Come on, man.
What? I just asked you about the nipper.
Monday, okay? Okay?
What's your problem?
It's February, man. It's cold.
Here in recent years, Nick has went the way of Steven Seagal, and he's doing a lot of direct-to-video movies, and he's kind of falling on hard times. So I'm pretty excited to say he has a brand new movie in theaters starting this Friday, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Looking forward to that. It's going to have a lot of meltdowns. Okay, now that we got that taken care of, kick your shoes off and listen to some true ghost stories from Our Haunted World.
This little ditty on our way through Ocean City, heading south along the Jersey Shore, on the way to Cape May. I fell in love with you on the way to Cape May.
Well, I got an email today. One of my friends, Gina, stayed overnight in Cape May, the very haunted Cape May, and I'll tell you a little bit about it before I tell you her little story. So, are there really ghosts in Cape May? And this is Cape May, New Jersey. Yep, darn tootin' there are ghosts in Cape May. Actually, the entire town is haunted. Some people claim it might be the most haunted place in the country. I've heard the theory that spirits linger because of the intense energy created as the Delaware River and the Atlantic Ocean meet. I covered that a little more in some book they have. Cape May was featured on an episode of Haunted Towns, and they speculate the high amount of quartz in the ground is one possible explanation. No one really knows for sure, but many, many people have experienced it. The ghost in our 170-year-old house is named Margaret. Rachel, our daughter, said she just senses that it is her name. We became aware of the ghostly presence in our home early on when she started playing little tricks on us, closing and locking doors, turning on the water, taking things and then putting them in odd places. We, as well as several guests, have heard the walking above them when no one was there. A painter we contracted refused to work after dark because he felt something watching him when he worked at night. Our niece Grace and her boyfriend Nick recently heard the eerie sound of furniture or maybe a trunk being dragged across the floor above them. The thing is, there is plush carpeting on the third floor. It would be impossible to naturally make that kind of sound. There are similar stories in homes all over Cape May. Here's where Gina's story comes in. I was just in Cape May. I've never been there before and knew zero about the history of the area. I had a ghost appear to me twice in our room. You know, some of these places you go, these historical places, you know, it's nice to spend the night, take it off your bucket list, but nothing happens. Well, she had a ghost appear to her twice in the room, and he unlocked and opened our door once, and then opened the door and rattled the the handle many times. I mentioned it to someone at the inn, and they gave me a brief history of the Peter Shields home and the son, Earl Shields. I figure someone with an interest in this might want to hear the story, and yes, darn tootin', we do. Our In Dark Places appreciate your story, Gina. And it's called Cape May. And there's a little song that goes with the... It's called On the Way to Cape May.
Our Haunted World, Chapter 3. I talk a lot about my dad's haunted house. My dad bought the place in 1995, and I was 18 years old. I spent many years in that house, and I have many ghost stories. But this story didn't happen to me. My dad graduated high school in 1965, I do believe it was. And when he was in kindergarten, quite a few years before that, he had a friend named Dennis. They were best friends, and they spent a lot of time together that year in school, maybe up until like the first or second grade. But suddenly, Dennis moved to Louisiana, quite the jump from West Virginia. I don't know the story behind that, but he lived many years the rest of his life there in Louisiana. And sometime back around 2015, I think it was, Dennis looked my dad up. I don't know how he found him. Called some people and knew some people here and there, because neither of those two use Facebook or anything like that. Somehow, Dennis tracked my dad down and called him on the phone, and they talked for hours and caught up on old times from when they were just wee lads. And suddenly, Dennis declared that he's going to come and see my dad. And my dad was kind of surprised by that, as you might guess, because they hadn't seen each other in 50 years. So Dennis set the date, and he came and spent a week with my dad. And that tradition continued for 4 or 5 years. Dennis would come in every summer and see my dad, spend 4 or 5 days with him every year. Up until last year, unfortunately, Dennis passed away back in 2021. The last time Dennis came was in 2019, I believe. I don't think he made the trip in 2020 because the whole world was shut down at that time and he didn't do any traveling or anything. But in 2019, he came to stay with my dad one last time. And as always, he slept in my old bedroom at my dad's house. One particular night at around 3 a.m., Dennis was getting ready to go to bed. He hadn't quite fell asleep yet. He was laying down and he heard a knock on the door. And he said, yeah, hold on just a minute. Let me get up out of bed and stuff. I'll let you in. Thinking it was my dad. And he opened the door, and there was no one there. So the next morning at breakfast, Dennis asked my dad what he wanted. My dad was like, eh? And Dennis said, you know, you came knocking on my door last night around 3 o'clock. What was you wanting? And my dad said, no, I was asleep at 3 o'clock. I didn't knock on your door. So, just one of the many stories of my dad's haunted house.
This story is from our friend Dan in Idaho. Thanks, Dan from Idaho. And it's called Phantom House Workers. Over the past few years, I haven't experienced anything other than the usual knocking sounds and shadows, which is fairly normal stuff here that I've gotten used to. However, the other night I got up around 2 a.m. to use the bathroom and had an unusual experience that I wanted to share. I walked out of my bedroom into the hallway to get to the bathroom, which is across the hall and down about 5 paces. If you were to continue down the hall past the bathroom, you would reach a doorway to the living room on the left, whereas the kitchen entrance is at the end of the hall on the right. The hall was pitch black in darkness. I don't usually turn lights on because I know the short distance to the bathroom and don't even think about it. As I was about to turn into the bathroom, I heard a deep male voice coming from the living room. He sounded as if he was facing me, and his voice was clear and projected to me well. He said, We're almost done here. I got the impression that he was with some other people and they were working on something in my living room. I didn't see any signs of light, so I didn't feel worried about an intruder. I also didn't think an intruder would make that announcement. In the bathroom, I quickly closed the door and turned on the light. I thought perhaps I had imagined the voice and that maybe I was a bit asleep. So I did what I came to do and turned out the light before opening the door to go back to my room and didn't worry about it. When I got to the dark hall, I heard the voice again, saying the same thing. I quickly went into my room, locked the door, slept the rest of my night with a dim bedside light on. I file this away with a strange and unexplained experiences. Phantom House Workers.
This one's called The Chained Man in Ancient Athens. Roman Senator Pliny the Younger, who died in AD 113, told a ghost tale so haunting that it survives till this day.
There was at Athens a large and roomy house, which had a bad name, so that no one could live there. In the dead of the night, a noise resembling the clash of iron was frequently heard, which, if you listened more attentively, sounded like the rattling of chains.
Disturbances that led to the appearance of a specter, form of an old man, of extremely emaciated and squalid appearance, with a long beard and disheveled hair rattling the chains on his feet and hands. Needless to say, the house was abandoned and had to be rented out for a cheap price. When a philosopher named Athenodorus heard the story, he reportedly rented the house and confronted the ghost. The ghost appeared and rattled around before vanishing. Athenodorus calmly marked the spot where the ghost vanished, and in the morning ordered that the spot be dug up, the story goes.
This was accordingly done, and the skeleton of a man in chains was found there, for the body, having lain a considerable time in the ground, was putrefied and moldered away from the chains.
After being given a proper burial, the ghost departed, and the house was haunted no more, according to Pliny Still.
Some people say that tragedy causes the ghost syndrome, and this place has had more than its share of tragedy. The Jean Harlow House. Los Angeles is one of the best destinations for haunted house hunting, and this Bavarian-style home in Beverly Hills has a particularly gruesome history. In 1932, it was home to the iconic actress Jean Harlow and her abusive husband, Paul Byrne, who shot himself in the head while standing in front of the mirror. Their butler discovered him and called MGM instead of the police, so there were tons of rumors that it wasn't actually suicide. Many suspected Byrne's ex-girlfriend, a suspicion exacerbated by her jumping off a boat to her death a couple days later. Jean moved out after his death, but died only a few years later at the age of 26. But wait! It gets creepier. In 1963, celebrity hairstylist Jay Sebring bought the home and lived there with his girlfriend, Sharon Tate, until she left him for Roman Polanski. They were still friends and remained so until both of them were murdered by the Charles Manson cult. Tate was the same age as Harlow when she passed. But back to when the couple lived in the Harlow house, Tate told several friends of creepy occurrences in the home and even mentioned it in interviews. For example, once when she was sleeping in the master bedroom alone, she saw a creepy little man. Her friends say that she believed it to be Paul Byrne's ghost. She was so freaked out when she saw the alleged ghost that she ran out of the room and then saw a hanging, shadowy corpse with its throat slit in the hallway. There are also stories about two other people dying in a swimming pool over the years. That's the Jean Harlow House in Los Angeles, California.
Joey and Tanya Madia live near Fairmont, West Virginia, on top of a hill that they have christened New Walton's Mountain. They have a spectacular view from their hilltop and the wooded areas around them. They are by no means isolated. Four other homes dot the holler, but no one is close enough to be called a next-door neighbor. It's a rough ride off the main road to get to their house, and in the winter, snow sometimes forces them to leave their vehicles outside the holler. From the time they moved in with their daughter and son, they have found themselves part of a constant play of paranormal activity. Some of it just seems to happen around them, and some of it seems directed at them.
"There are things that just move through on their way to somewhere else," said Tanya. "Sometimes things stick around."
The Medeas have had a long-standing interest in spiritual and paranormal matters, especially Native American spirituality, and they have investigated around Point Pleasant for Mothman activity. Tanya and Joey had a life history of paranormal experiences. The Medeas moved into their new house in 2007. Tanya, daughter Jolie, and son Jeremy were the first to occupy it before the furniture arrived. Tanya noticed a creepy feel, especially in the master bedroom. She felt distinctly uncomfortable sleeping alone there and asked Jeremy to come and sleep on the floor until Joey was able to move in. The discomfort continued, however, even after the furniture arrived. One night, Tanya awakened to see a ghostly little girl standing by the side of her bed. The little girl visits from time to time, and if Joey must be away on business, Tanya will often sleep on the couch in the living room. Poltergeist activity happens in the house on an ongoing basis. Small objects disappear without explanation and reappear in strange places. Doors shut by themselves. Jolie hears banging noises in her bedroom often at night, and Jeremy, a skeptic about the paranormal, once saw his bedroom door move noticeably on its own, giving him a bit of a fright. The family has experienced computer and internet problems and mysterious phone calls in which the caller ID reads out nothing but zeros and no one is on the other end. Small white lights suddenly manifest in the house.
"They are like little white laser lights," said Tanya. "They open up and grow in size and then they suddenly blink out."
Once they were settled in, the Medeas constructed a sweat lodge and conducted a pipe ceremony, inviting the spirits of the land to make themselves known. The entities were happy to oblige. Tanya had met a Native American spirit guide in a meditation, and one night after the pipe ceremony, she fell asleep and awakened to hearing the spirit guide calling to her from outside in the back of the house, where the heavier woods are located. Being afraid of the dark, Tanya resisted going outside, and then thought better of it since they had extended an invitation to the spirits. Still, she did not go outside, but sat in the living room for a few minutes. For the next 3 weeks, the house reverberated at night with bangs and thumps against the backside when a bird committed suicide by flying into a window. Poor guy. And Tanya hit a deer on the road. It limped away. She concluded that the spirits were demanding her attention. The banging noises on the back of the house still happen on an intermittent basis. Tanya has experienced lucid dreams in which she awakens to find shape-shifting entities trying to get into the house. They always come out of the same place in the woods, in an opening between two large trees, as though there is a portal or a gateway. The entity usually starts as a Native American boy and shapeshifts into a Bigfoot-like creature, half man, half mole creature, or an alien. Tanya is always able to prevent them from entering the house. Mystery lights and shapes are seen in the sky. One night, Tanya laid in bed, admiring a full moon, whose light was so brilliant that it lit up the entire sky. And while she was gazing out the window across the holler, she noticed a red blinking light moving just over the treetops. It looked like a radio tower, except that it was moving. She thought it might be an airplane. And then, the light suddenly made crazy movements up and down, vertically, and then sideways. She got up to get her car keys and drive out and try to get a better look. But as soon as she had fetched the keys and looked out the window again, the light was gone. On another occasion, Tanya was driving down the holler toward home. From the woods in the back of the house, a weird shape arose into the air. It looked like a huge transparent gray sheet, and it slowly floated and undulated through the trees, which were bare-limbed. It looked big enough to cover about 2 dozen trees.
Wow, that's new,
thought Tanya, as she stopped to watch it. After a few seconds, the sheet vanished, never to be seen again. Mystery creatures and entities appear on the land. Fairies, small folk covered in twigs and leaves, come out at dusk and dawn, and always in the same area. Joey once glimpsed a gray gargoyle-like creature while he was driving out of the holler. Stray cats are rare, but one day Tanya arrived to find a massive gray cat with weird-looking pea-green eyes sitting in the driveway. The cat refused to budge, and something about it made Tanya stay in the car until it departed. Since that time, the gray cat has returned, sometimes with a white cat and a black cat. All four members of the Medea family have seen the cats appear 1 second and vanish without a trace the next. Activity goes in cycles. The house and property will fairly buzz with paranormal activity for a few weeks and then become dormant for a time, as though a battery has to be recharged from some other dimension. Several years on, the Medeas have become accustomed to strange events and sights and take most of them in stride.
You get used to things,
said Tanya. Although the master bedroom still has an uncomfortable vibe, nothing feels overtly threatening in the house or on the land, she said.
What's the deal with apartments? Why do they call them apartments when they're all together? Okay, that's Seinfeld right there. Anyways, this is a haunted apartment. It's called 455A Sackett Street. You never hear as much about haunted apartments as haunted houses, which is strange considering that apartments have much more turnover and therefore a higher likelihood of something or someone evil having lived there before you moved in. That was definitely the case with 455A Sackett Street in Brooklyn. One woman who grew up there writes about her first-hand experiences, including unexplained fires, seriously bad energy, family tragedies, personal suffering, and here's the kicker: the body of a child discovered in the wall after several suspicious sightings of a similar-looking shadow child in the mirror. So this first-hand account is by Jane H. It was reported on January 14th, 2007, and this is out of Brooklyn, New York. I wrote about this briefly in a prior article in 2001. To recap, we moved into 455A Sackett Street when I was about 14 years old, on April 1st, 1998. From the moment we moved in, something was not right. It was an incredibly dark apartment, though we should have been thrilled because it was the first apartment we've ever had with more than one floor. There were 3 floors, including the basement, and it was nice if you could ignore the feeling of someone standing just behind you or staring at you wherever you went. Within 2 weeks of moving in, I was, let's say, attacked in a very bad manner in my own bedroom by a man from the neighborhood. An elderly woman who lived right next door most of our life informed us that no one had occupied our apartment for more than a year at a time since as long as she could remember. She also related that terrible tragedies befell all of said people. With only a few weeks of moving in, continuing through the day they moved out. Though we had eerie feelings in the apartment, we had not noticed anything too weird. The apartment was very uninviting, cold and damp. We tried to decorate it, warm it up a little, but nothing happened. Another thing that was, no matter what we did, we could not get a phone installed. We had the phone company over 4 or 5 times to fix the wires, but no matter what they did, they could get absolutely nothing, not even static. So we were pretty isolated. The entire time we were there, weird things continued. The ceiling above my brother's bed collapsed. The only reason he wasn't hurt, because he got up to use the bathroom. A fire started in my room. The fire department never determined why. If my friend hadn't stopped by and rang the bell, I would have continued sleeping. Within 5 minutes of answering the bell, my neighbor came out screaming that my room was on fire. I ran up and the entire back wall was in flames. I tried to put it out with a blanket, and unbeknownst to me, the door had closed behind me. It went from daylight to dark in 2 minutes, and I started to pass out. Thankfully, my friend ran up and opened the door, carrying me down the stairs, or I would have been literally toast. After that, my neighbor confided in us that strange things had always gone on in my building. In the 30s or 40s, a fire had killed a little boy within a month of the family moving in. In the 60s, a couple were whacked by the mob because of some insidious affair. There were no records because of the church records had been burned in a fire, so we couldn't get any more information than what people said. There were other things that happened. A friend of mine coming into my apartment and seeing a little boy in burnt rags staring at her in my bathroom mirror. She ran out crying and refused to set foot in my door again. Another friend who slept over. No, both friends were not told of our experiences. Another friend who slept over awoke in the middle of the night swearing that she saw a woman walk into my room through the door. My brother and I heard children crying and laughing one day downstairs, and we tried to leave my mother's room. We were locked in, even though there was no lock, for an hour before it finally opened. My mother was downstairs doing the laundry when the light turned off in the basement, and she felt a cold, scaly hand grab her shoulder. Needless to say, my dad did the laundry after that. Weird smells, sounds, and the feeling that something or someone did not want you there. That something bad was going to happen to you, and that you were not welcome at all. We moved out a year to the day after, as soon as we could find a new apartment. We found out some more after that. The people that moved in after us tried to renovate the basement and found the body of a little boy in the wall. They left suddenly one night, not too long after, and never returned. Another couple moved in and left as inexplicably as the last, and so on and so forth to this day. Since then, we met a woman who had gone to my mother's office. She's a nurse that works in a doctor's office because of a nervous condition. My mother noticed the address on her insurance card didn't match the one listed, and the woman explained she had only lived at 55A Sackett Street for a few months and she had to leave because her mother had died along with various other tragedies from the first week of moving in. My mother asked if the woman ever noticed anything weird. Well, the woman explained exactly what we had gone through. We are all fine now, happy to be out of there, and we moved on. We still see our old neighbor once in a while, and she always says the best thing we ever did was move out of that godforsaken house. Needless to say, we agree. We've not been haunted since, and life is good. If there is one thing we learned, I'd say it was to trust our instincts. If you get horrible vibes from a place, don't put it off as folly. It might just save you a whole lot of trouble. Haunted apartments.
This is a story from our friend Michelle Allen. This is called The Shadow Man. When I was 10 years old, I lived in a trailer on my uncle's farm for a bit. It wasn't a normal trailer. It had been lifted to sit on a bunch of stacked cinder blocks so that stairs and a large patio deck could be built. In my room, I had a window just over my bed to the right. The window had a goon 16 to 20 feet off the ground. One night, I woke up around 3 or 4 a.m. feeling like I was being watched. After looking around my room, I turned over to go back to sleep, and that's when I saw the Shadow Man for the first time. Blacker than the darkness outside, I couldn't make out any facial features, but I could tell it was a man's torso and head wearing a cowboy hat. I watched him for a good 3 minutes. I didn't feel fear, so I rolled back over and went back to sleep. The next morning, I went outside to see if there were any footprints or signs of a ladder being there. Nothing. The dirt wasn't disturbed at all, so I told my mom about what I saw, but she believed it was my Uncle Shorty. Yeah, because my 4-foot uncle can appear in my 16-foot window with no lighter. This started my road down the rabbit hole of all things paranormal and supernatural. I read books and watched videos. This led me to find Ed and Lorraine Warren. Listening to them helped me understand that I wasn't just seeing things. It made me reflect on that night with new insight. It was abnormally cold that night in my room for the summertime, and we didn't have an AC in the trailer. I devoted years to learning everything I could. When I moved to San Diego, I decided to check out the Whaley House. As I'm in the backyard, I have an urge to take photos, so I start taking photos of every inch in the backyard. When I got home, I started looking through the photos, and I got two different apparitions, but one of them was the exact figure I saw when I was 10. The hat, the body, perfect match. Has he been following me all this time? Is it a protector? Or is it waiting for something? Wow, scary stuff. Thanks again, Michelle Allen, for that cool story. Be sure to check out Michelle over on Instagram. She is known as Nightbat Paranormal on there. So look her up. I got wise. You're the devil in disguise. For yes, you are devil in disguise.
I don't know if we ever talked about a haunted bathroom. Yep. This is called The Devil in the Bathroom. It was reported in April of 2022. Well, just a couple weeks ago. This is from Arizona. I was 6 years old. My older sister was 9. The year was 1982. My mom and dad went out somewhere that night and got us a babysitter. We lived in a very small 2-story, 2-bedroom apartment with 1 bathroom that was upstairs. Our babysitter was a teenage girl who lived 2 doors down. The babysitter was keeping us occupied, and I remember we were all coloring at the table. I had to go to the bathroom really bad, but I was scared to go upstairs alone. I don't remember ever being scared in that house before this day. I asked my sister if she would come with me to the bathroom. She said no, because she was coloring. I kept asking her, almost begging her, if she would come with me, but she kept saying no. Finally, the babysitter got sick of me asking, yelled at me, and told me to go to the bathroom myself, because my sister did not want to go. I remember being so scared as I walked up the stairs alone. Before I knew it, I was standing on the top landing. The small hallway was dark, and so was the bathroom. I stood there on the landing, tilting my head in front of the doorway. The only part of my body entering the bathroom was my tiny hand to flip on the light switch as I stepped up the last stair onto the hallway. The lights were those horrible fluorescent tube lights that flickered for moments before coming all the way on. As I flipped up the light switch, the lights dimly turned on, flickering. At that moment, in the dim light, I saw it. the devil was sitting on the rim of the bathtub. It was what you would almost picture in your mind as a stereotypical-looking devil. It was red, had horns, and a tail. It sat there on the rim of the bathtub, motionless, silent, and we locked eyes for what seemed like an eternity. I was petrified, and I physically couldn't move. The lights seemed to stay flickering a lot longer than they normally would. Finally, when the lights came all the way on and fully illuminated the bathroom, the devil was gone. I must have ran back down the stairs right after that, because I was so scared I don't remember. My sister says she remembers me running downstairs yelling, "The devil is in the bathroom!" She said she remembers running upstairs to the bathroom and then moving the shower curtain around to see if there was anything in the bathtub. The next thing I remember was my mom walking into the house and me running to her, telling her the devil was in the bathroom. But she didn't take me seriously. So I ran outside to my dad. He picked me up and held me in his arms, and I told him that I saw the devil in the bathroom. I remember him saying to me, "I believe you." That was the very first paranormal experience I had that I can remember. It was several years later before I had my next experience with the paranormal.
This story comes from McMinnville, Tennessee. Are there ghosts at Falcon Rest? If there is one question asked more than any other, it must be, is Falcon Rest really haunted? Many of the stories about spirits at Falcon Rest center around the bedroom at the foot of the staircase, where Clay Faulkner, the mansion's original owner, died in 1916. Footsteps heard on the steps when no one was there. Items found in a different place one day than they had been the day before. The scent of cigar smoke in the air. One Christmas, a young man was decorating a tree in the upstairs hallway. He came to the visitor center looking very pale and asked, "Has anyone been in the mansion lately?" The answer was, "No, but why do you ask?" And he gulped and said, "I was whistling. It came upon a midnight clear, and I stopped, but the whistling continued for several seconds and started moving down the steps." According to this young man, our ghost not only appears to have been in the Christmas spirit, he also has perfect pitch. Spirits are well known for interfering with electronics. Faulkner was ahead of its time with technology. In 1896, his mansion had indoor plumbing, electric lights, central steam heat, a telephone, and primitive air conditioning. So he would naturally be interested in today's recording equipment. The Cookeville, Tennessee PBS station taped what they thought was a flawless feature several years ago. They called to say they would have to do it over. "It sounded like there was a hurricane when we played back the tape," they said, even though the day of the taping had been perfectly still. The PBS radio station in nearby Murfreesboro won the Tennessee Broadcasters Award for their audio walking tour of Falcon Rest, but only after they edited out unexplained interference in the mansion's original dining room. A tour guide named Liz was telling a group in Mr. Faulkner's bedroom about the suspected ghost, and one woman said,
"When I came in, I saw a young lady wearing a bonnet and a long dress coming to the mansion's front room. Was that one of the reenactors?" Liz said. "There's no one here in costume today. The front door is supposed to be locked. And we don't really have reenactors, but we do have inhabitants."
Immediately, there was a loud crash that sounded like an explosion. Liz went through the rest of the tour, dreading what she'd find broken. But she saw nothing out of place. It took another trip through to realize the ornately carved mirror that had been hanging above the dining room buffet had fallen. without hitting anything on the buffet, and struck the floor without getting broken itself. The wire that was holding it up was still firmly attached, and the screws were still in the wall. It may have been a coincidence, but we like to think the inhabitants were trying to confirm Liz's story. We've been told since then that ghosts don't like looking into two mirrors that directly face each other. This one had faced the other one over the mantle. And it was the third time that the mirror had tried to fall down. The mirror was determined. It kept trying. Since next time, they might break something on the buffet, and one good ghost story is worth a whole lot of mirrors. We've just left the mirror where they dropped it years ago. Every year, Falcon Rest is open. We have more visitors who report experiences with unseen inhabitants of the mansion. Sometimes these might be figments of overactive imaginations, but occasionally a self-professed skeptic finds reason to rethink his doubts. Such was the case with a retired gentleman who toured the mansion with his wife. When the guide brought them back to the visitor center, he said,
"If this had happened to my wife, I wouldn't believe her, but it happened to me."
And that was enough to bring us out of the office to get more details.
"We had just gone into the dining room," he said, "and all the hairs on my arms started to stand up. I felt cold air move right through me, like something had literally walked through my body."
That word.
"I've never had an experience like that in my entire life, even though there has been plenty of opportunity to. After all, I was a funeral director for 40 years.
His story reminded our gent of one of his own that he had never mentioned before.
"Years ago, I was walking in one direction through the mansion's dining room, and I felt something cold go through me in the opposite direction. It was one of the strangest feelings I've ever had."
This story is called A Man on the Roof. And this one comes out of Australia. Just recently, my poor town was hammered by a rain bomb that flooded the town out, drowned it for the first time in its 140-odd years history. It's used to getting flooded, but not like this. It rose over the levee 15 to 16 meters high, fast-flowing water. It caught us all by surprise. Now for my story. I'm a member of a volunteer organization, an emergency service that specializes in storm and water, land searches, and flood rescues. That's what I am, a flood operator, a fancy name for being a rescuer. My job is to seek, locate, and perform rescues, mostly risking our lives to save others. And I've done many. My mate Simon and I were on the Archangel, a large zodiac. Imagine that's some kind of vessel. And we're going down the flooded streets. The street lights were out, but the beam of ours was bright enough to navigate through floating debris. We called out, but no one answered, which is a worry to us. But then Simon swung the beam around to one of the houses, searching it. "What's wrong?" I asked. "Thought I saw someone there. Look." In the beam, a man was standing waving at us, pointing at the roof. We navigated over to the house and climbed on the roof, but the man was nowhere to be seen, which was, again, a worrying sign. Below us, we heard someone crying and hammering. We tore the roofing off and found a little old 89-year-old woman, water up to her chin, standing on a chair. We got her out and into the boat. I looked around and asked her about the man. She looked at me bemusingly. "What man?" Simon told her that we saw a man wearing a plaid shirt, which looked outdated, and pants, but no raincoat. She frowned and then smiled sadly. "That'll be my Andrew." "Is he around?" I asked. Oh, no, she shook her head. Andrew's dead. He died in the 1974 flood. He was my disabled son. He drowned while trying to get off the roof. Looks like he was looking after his mom, huh? Simon and I looked at each other but said nothing. We brought her back, but told our commander the story. She looked at us and said, "Least the old woman is safe." That night we went back out and saved a further 20 lives, but the man on the roof will always stay in my memory. Man on the roof. Not all ghost stories are scary.
This is The Ghost of Sleepy Hollow Road by Don G. Thanks, Don. The world may know Kentucky for its rolling green horse pastures and world-renowned bourbon. But for those who know where to look, they can get their fill of ghost stories and haunted places. Most of the myths in Kentuckiana area have one story, says Rod Whitenack, senior editor for LouisvilleHalloween.com. There might be variations of the story, but this one has four completely different stories. Sleepy Hollow Road is located near the eastern edge of the border of Jefferson and Odom counties in Kentucky. Whitenack laughs as he thinks about the name of the road. I think any time you name a road after a Washington Irving story, that's a classic ghost story. There's going to be stories that crop up about that place, said Whitenack. There are no stories of the Headless Horseman on this foreboding road, but the tale is just as chilling. Whitenack gives a vivid description. It's a stretch of road that has trees on both sides, says Whitenack. It's kind of uncomfortable. It makes it feel like they're encroaching on your car. It is a winding two-lane blacktop road with a tree line that becomes a menacing canopy in many places. If the full moon is out, there's shadows cast across the road. It's a very uncomfortable place, says Whitenack. Imagine the feeling on the desolate road if you found you were being followed. Our legend of Sleepy Hollow Road begins there. Basically, there's someone driving down the road, and lights pop up behind them, and they say, "Someone's following me," said Whitenack. It makes them have to go faster and faster. And then the car pulls out in front of them, and they find out it's a hearse that's been following them. This tale often ends with the car being followed, running off the road, down a drop over 30 feet in some places. Crybaby Bridge is another stop on this long stretch of road. This is from pioneer times, Whitenack stresses. The story goes back a long, long way. The tale stands the test of time as it is still told today. You'll still hear screams and cries of the helpless victims today. Supposedly, women that had unwanted children, or maybe malformed children, they'd take down to the creek by the bridge and throw them in the water. You can still, on a full moon night, hear the cries of the babies as they've been dropped in the water to drown, says Whitenack. The old-fashioned bridge that once stood there is now replaced with concrete and steel, but some say nothing will take away the pain of the doomed mothers and their tiny victims. If you have plans to drive this road of many horrors, don't plan on doing anything else. A time portal or a true twilight zone is reported on this haunted prospect road. Whitenack explains. He's back. You're driving down the road, you come out, and you look at your watch, and 2 hours have passed, and you thought you'd only been there a couple of minutes. Three hair-raising tales followed by the last and the lesser known of the stories of Sleepy Hollow. It has been named Devil's Point. Rumors began in the late 70s that an area in the woods along the road was the site of satanic rituals. Supposedly, there's a cult that took up right around that area, and they did horrible things that I can't even talk about, said Whitenack, shaking his head. This final Sleepy Hollow legend has been broadcast over and over again through the years by high school kids looking to spook and be spooked by the paranormal. High school kids make up some pretty graphic stories. As Whitenack remembers from his teen years and the tales they told of Sleepy Hollow, there are many spooky sites across the world. However, Sleepy Hollow may just be more urban legends in one place than maybe any other locality in the world. That's four on one stretch of road, brags Whitenack. Thanks, Whitenack. Good reporting.
I think we've all heard the stories about black-eyed children. This story is called The Red-Eyed Children. And it comes to us from Jojo out of the Philippines. Thank you, Jojo. And this happened in January of 2019. I was riding a bus at the time. There were only four or five passengers left, including me. It was 9:45 in the evening. The bus stopped. The door opened, a girl entered. She's about 10 or 11 years old. Judging from the color of her hair, she's a European or Westerner. I glanced at her. I admit that I'm attractive to much younger women. What a creeper. I don't know if this guy's 30 or 14. She sat almost 7 or 8 seats away. As the bus moves, I continued staring at her. At first, you wouldn't think of anything because she wore normal clothing, but her bangs are covering her eyes, and she's alone. My thought is, what on earth is this girl doing in the wee hours of the evening? Where are her parents? Why is she traveling alone without a parent or guardian? So from time to time, I glanced at her. I start eating my taco. When I'm done with my taco, I glance at her again. She's staring back at me, although I still couldn't see her eyes. I looked at my shoes and smiled. I'm thinking of sitting beside her and talking to her. But when I looked at her again, a dreaded, frightening feeling engulfed me. I finally saw her eyes, blood red. She's staring back at me with red eyes. At this moment, I was shaking with fear. I looked at the other passengers to see if they saw her red eyes too, but all of them were busy at their own business. They didn't seem to notice she was there. Again, I stared at my shoes. The bus stopped. I heard footsteps. Even if I'm not looking, I sensed that it was the girl getting off and she's staring at me. When her presence was gone, more passengers came on and I thought I could finally breathe easier. But when I stared at the window, I saw her in the fields. This time, she's with around 10 more children. They were aged from about 6 to 16, all of them girls. The two smallest were holding teddy bears. They were all looking at me with red eyes. Even as the bus moves, they never break their eye contact with me. At home, I told my older sister of what happened. Of course, she didn't believe me. She jokingly said that's the result of too much chasing younger women. Your sister's correct. You're a creeper, Jojo. Even my friends at work, when I told them about this, just laughed at me. But for me, it is not a funny experience.
This one is kind of different. This is a story from a guy named Jesse in San Antonio who is an Uber driver. I recently got out of the Navy and started driving for Uber. For the first couple weeks, I stuck to hanging out around the base, trying to catch other service members who needed a ride. One Friday, a rider gets into my car and asks if I can get him to Fort Hood in a couple of hours. I told him that it would be no problem, and we started our trip. A couple minutes into the ride, he asked if I could pull over so he could use the restroom. I pulled into a gas station right off the freeway. I was sitting in the car waiting for him to come back for about 10 minutes when the gas station attendant started locking up. I told him that my passenger was still inside and that he was using the restroom. The gas station clerk then told me that he had been getting ready to close the shop when he saw me pull in. When no one got out of the car and I was still sitting there, he decided that he wasn't going to wait any longer. I insisted that this guy was inside, so he went in and checked, and he didn't find anyone. He even called his manager to get permission to go over the security tape. What he showed me gives me goosebumps to this day. I pulled in, and no one ever got out of my car, and no one went inside. All I know about the guy was that his name was Mikey, and he was 19 years old, and he had been in the Navy for 2 years. His wife Marissa was waiting for him in New York, where he bought a house. It still freaks me out to this day.
This story is called I Saw the Devil at Night. It's from our friend Stewie in Mexico. Thanks, Stewie. So this is a story of when I was around 8 years old visiting my grandpa and his housekeeper in the slums of Mexico. There is some backstory, and I want to give a good description of the neighborhood that this takes place in. My grandpa's house is an old brick and cement single-story square house with a road in front running parallel. The gray brick road has a cement walkway on each side. There are similar-looking houses in front and beside my grandpa's house. If you stand at the front door looking towards the road, across the street to the right, there's an 8-foot-tall red brick wall and a giant mansion that looks like the Alamo building. The windows are open archways with no glass. It is 3 stories tall, and it's L-shaped, and it's a corner house. It stands abandoned for some time, and my cousins have gone inside and had a scary encounter. I tagged along, but that's another story. I want to hear that one. I woke up late at night in my cot and looked around the room. I feel wide awake as I look towards the fogged up window with the street light shining through. I feel the urge to find my older brother, who's around 15 years old, who hangs out with his cool cousins on the left corner of the block. I open the door and walk towards the front door. It's not locked, so I open it up and step outside on the sidewalk. There is the sound of a slightly busy city, but there's no one on the street, and the stars are out. I feel excited and start running left in the middle of the brick road. I get closer to the corner store where my brother hangs out, but it looks closed. I stop and turn around and run back towards my grandpa's house. I think maybe he's gone the other way to the right of my grandpa's house. I start to get a little nervous as I pass my grandpa's house. I can see the giant brick gate of the mansion on the left, my left-hand side. The road is dimly lit up with a warm yellow glow from the street lamps. The lights seem to be spaced out because there's a dark section as I walk. The road begins to go uphill. I see someone standing at the top of the hill in the center of the road. My eyes adjust as I get closer. It's the silhouette of a tall man wearing a large-shaped hat, like a flat mariachi hat. The figure is pitch black on the road, standing still. I see the glowing red eyes staring back at me. I feel the evil and believe it is grinning at me. Sounds like maybe a hat man. I turn around and run back towards my grandpa's house. I close the door and jump into bed and fall asleep as soon as I lay down. I never told my family about the encounter, as I felt it would spoil the good time we were all having while visiting. I believe it was the devil that night, and after some research, others have had similar experiences seeing a dark figure wearing a large hat.
And just like that, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. If you have a true story and you'd like to be a guest on the show, or if you'd like to be a part of our Haunted World Chapter 4, send an email to indarkplacespod@hotmail.com. We'll see you again next week. God bless you.